here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in the studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And, of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our seminars, and see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites as well. You can also automatically link up to our Facebook page and join in on our discussion boards on Facebook.
And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm, Glazer & Associates, directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call us at 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com.
Well, last week we had Jan Bergman on from Cyber Citizens for Justice on the show, and we spoke about the new association laws that became effective on July 1st, a lot of them actually, and they really affect a lot of different people, and how, despite all the hoopla, these laws really won't do much to help our listeners who live in a community association throughout the state.
Absolutely, Karen. Great show last week. We had a lot of fun. Thanks again to Jan for being our guest and for shedding light on what really is the shortcomings of the Florida legislature when it comes to helping citizens that live in condos and HOAs. Again, these new laws, at least to me, don't do a thing to help put real money in the hands of associations. And instead of passing laws that do little or nothing, we would like to see some real change here at the show, like making the banks foreclose faster, making them pay more, and have delinquent owners maybe post their assessments in the court registry each month during a foreclosure action, just like tenants do in landlord tenant eviction actions.
Amen, right?
I see no why it shouldn't be the same way. But moving on, first of all, happy 4th of July weekend to everybody. Hope everybody's enjoying it. But because of the 4th of July holiday, how about we talk a little bit today about what rights owners in both condos and HOAs have to celebrate July 4th by showing their affection for the country and by displaying the American flag. Believe it or not, there are actually statutes written about the rights of owners and occupants to display the flag that basically gives them that right, but certain limitations may apply.
For instance, in a condominium here in Florida, the statute says any unit owner may display one portable, removable United States flag in a respectful way and on Armed Forces Day, Memorial Day, Flag Day, Independence Day, and Veterans Day may display in a respectful way portable, removable official flags not larger than 4.5 feet by 6 feet that represent the United States Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, or Coast Guard, regardless of any declaration rules or requirements dealing with flags or decorations.
So tomorrow, you can get to display two flags, one U.S. flag and one for the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, or Coast Guard?
Yeah, that's correct, Karen. But believe it or not, the rules are actually different in a homeowners association. In an HOA, a homeowner can actually put up a flagpole up to 20 feet high, but also in an HOA, on those certain holidays like tomorrow, like on July 4th, you can also display a POW MIA flag. So the condo statute Scott just mentioned, it doesn't allow for the display of a POW MIA flag, and in HOA, that second flag has to be smaller in size than the U.S. flag. So believe it or not, if you're a former prisoner of war, you can let the world know tomorrow by displaying a POW flag if you live in an HOA. But if you're a former POW and if you live in a condo, you can't put up your POW flag. Really strange. Hmm. Apparently, the Florida legislature allows condos to act more like, I guess, POW camps than HOAs. But is it me, or I just don't see a lot of homes displaying the flag any longer? Now, even on July 4th, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, after 9/11, we kind of had this patriotic fever going on where everybody was displaying flags, even on their cars. But I don't know. How do you guys feel? I just don't feel like I see the flag too much anymore.
Well, you know, as unfortunate as this is, it was more of a trend than anything else, I think. I mean, I think everybody still loves being an American. But if, you know, you don't see the politicians with their pins on their jackets as much as you used to.
Right.
And, you know, there's just no reason right now for it to be trendy to wrap yourself in the flag. But you know what? I think it would be great if people, especially on holidays like tomorrow, you know, showed the colors.
Because, absolutely. Why not?
You know. I don't know if we have that jingoistic appeal right now, but I sure do know after 9/11, almost every car on the road had flags coming out of the windows. And I even looked to buy a flag pin, and they were all sold out. I couldn't get one.
Yeah.
And homes displayed the flag. Definitely we don't have that fervor, but hopefully tomorrow people will get out their flags. If you don't own one, go buy one.
Yeah.
They're available.
Well, not to stray too far from topic, but I know there's an article that either came out this week or is about to come out this week, actually written by somebody who we know quite well and who we represent at the firm, who says, unfortunately, a poll of Americans reveals that as Americans, we have felt the worst about our country and our future since the 1930s, since the time of the Depression. So it's unfortunate. Maybe that's why we don't have that patriotic fever, because apparently most of us, or a majority of us, don't feel all too good about at this juncture about the future of our country. But hopefully, you know, that will turn around.
Right.
At least when we get a Republican in there. Scott, don't say anything.
Don't
say anything. Anyway, well, at least we have a law in Florida about all this stuff, because an interesting article was on Yahoo this week about a homeowner in an HOA in Ohio who is a veteran of both the Korean War and the Vietnam War, and who put up a flagpole in his front yard, and the developer mandated that it be removed because the developer claimed it interfered with the ability of the landscape company to cut the grass, and because the developer thought the flag should be illuminated at night.
Jeez.
Yeah. So.
And instead of removing it, dozens of supporters gathered at the home the other day, and they had a flag-raising ceremony.
Well, maybe Ohio can learn a few things from Florida.
Yeah, you would think. But, well, maybe we have the flag issue dealt with properly in Florida. But as you know, we've been debating on the show over the last few weeks the merits of that new legislation that seeks to increase competition in the insurance industry here in Florida, and that seeks to have citizens play a much more minor role, you know, in insurance matters here. And according to a report by the Heartland Institute, Florida ranks as among the worst states for consumers purchasing insurance for the second year in a row. Now, this report focused on two basic questions, which we've been speaking about on the show the last couple of weeks. First question was, how free are consumers to choose property and casualty insurance that they want? And how free are the insurers to provide the property and casualty insurance products consumers say they want? Now, only four states in the country was given an F in insurance matters, and Florida was one of the four.
Oh, all right, G. Gordon, but first before I comment on this report, first I want to tell the listeners that the Heartland Institute is a conservative think tank in Chicago that has funded research that supposedly discredits links between smoking and cancer. It's also a major sponsor of conferences that discredit climate change. And as energy and tobacco companies contributed to the Institute with respect to those issues, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, Glazer, that the insurance industry funded this report. So my advice is to take it with a grain of salt. But the Institute cited Florida's failure to pass legislation to help consumers gain more options when choosing insurance, and blamed Governor Crist for previously vetoing the legislation that was signed into law last week by Governor Scott.
Well, at least according to the Heartland Institute, Governor Rick Scott and Sean Virtue from Smith, Watson, Parker are on the money when supporting legislation that would bring more competition to the marketplace and give Florida consumers more of a choice when trying to purchase insurance. But again, I guess only time will tell with this new legislation. Let's see if it works out as we approach hurricane season. How about we go to our first call of the day, Debbie from West Palm Beach.
Hey, Debbie. Hi, how are you today?
Okay, how can we help you, Debbie?
I really appreciate what you guys are talking about as far as the facts and stuff. And I do live in a condo association, and I believe that a lot of our freedoms are being taken away because in my association, which is with the Pine Ridges, but they won't allow us to feed the ducks. If we feed the ducks, they're, you know, we get fined $100, and I don't understand that because it's nature. What is there anything that we can do about that?
Okay, well, basically, condos can make reasonable rules regarding use of the common areas. So if you're bored, and believe it or not, I get calls the other way. And I get complaints the other way from boards actually saying that people are feeding the ducks and it's creating a mess and, you know, making the common elements really, really dirty. How do we prevent owners from actually feeding ducks on the common areas? So the question is, can the board make a rule that would prevent owners from doing that on the common elements? I would say absolutely 100% yes, if the board reasonably believes that, you know, by passing this rule, it would keep the common elements, you know, much more cleaner and safe and sanitary. You know, no question about it. I don't think that that law in and of itself is necessarily unreasonable.
But what the other part to that is I've seen and I have pictures of our president of the association shooting ducks.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that makes him crazy, I mean, and it makes him a criminal.
They're not protected. Did you know that?
You can shoot a duck?
Yes. Especially those Muscovy ducks.
The Muscovy ducks, you can
barbecue them.
Yes. Really? Well, I know I'm not barbecuing any ducks this weekend, no matter what.
But the mallards are protected federally.
Really?
I know that much.
Even I learned something today. How about that? Well,
but I mean, I just think that that's like totally unfair, especially if you're doing it around the water and trying to keep them by the water.
Yeah.
So when I go feed the ducks, what I do is I put it in the water on the edge of the water, and if they ask me what I'm doing, I say I'm feeding the fish and the turtles.
I gotcha.
Well, I'm just a little concerned about hearing about somebody using a gun on a property that, you know, children might be, you know,
right,
feeding ducks at. So while I don't know if there's anything wrong with a rule against, you know, feeding the ducks, I have a big problem with somebody using a firearm in a public area
to
shoot ducks.
You're right. I actually saw that on the news. There's a whole bunch of worrying going on that people like to celebrate the actual 4th of July, not just with fireworks, but actually, you know, firing
gunfire,
your gun into the
yay.
Air. And down here, I guess, you know, one out of three of us actually do have guns, so it actually is a concern.
You can injure someone doing that.
But let's do this. Let's take our first break. If you have a question about flag flying, shooting ducks, which types of ducks taste better on the barbecue, or whatever it may be, give us a call here at Condo Craze and HOAs. That's 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls, and the phones are stacked at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll go to Tom from Fort Lauderdale first. Tom.
How are you, Tom?
Fourth of July weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
My problem is that I live in a condo development which is completely built out, and all the property is owned by condominium owners. But we have the recreational facility. I've been completely banned from it, and it may be, you know, indefinite suspension. And so one of the particular things is that the I'm having difficulty because the master, if there is a master association, it's saying it's not a master, it's a 617, because they allow outside memberships, people who don't have any equity, they allow to have a use fee.
Okay.
So one of the things that I found out is that the definition of association, which is in 718, was, you know, changed very positively for condo owners in 1991, 1992. But then there was a slight change in the wording in 2000, and they say the reason that the wording was changed was to eliminate a cross-reference. And now the Department of Business and Professional Regulation immediately decided to say that anytime they even hear that there's memberships that are non-exclusive to condominium owners, that they're excluded from master association or association status.
Right.
And I was just wondering if, you know, since I went through the legislative, you know, the court things, particularly Siegel, and what the court seemed to be interested in is what completely condominium unit owners, and if that existed and it couldn't be changed, then it would qualify as
an association.
Association, right, master.
Right.
But the department is hostile to including masters in regulation.
Right.
And so they don't give any. You can actually look, and in 2000, they changed the wording of association, the legislation. It was a bill, House Bill 593.
Right.
And the only reason they changed it was to eliminate a cross-reference. And it changes it significantly, because in the legislation that existed, which would bring it into conformity, really, with Jungle Den and with Siegel,
mm-hmm.
was that if you were a unit owner, and then all the unit owners were condominium unit owners, you would be included.
Right.
Now it simply says if you are a unit owner, but if membership, and you see they don't define what membership is.
Right. Tom,
what the court intended to be.
Wait, hold on, Tom. Tom, just hold on 1 second, because we're saying a lot of things here, and.
Yeah.
The way I understand the law basically is, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, collects assessments, we're getting talking about a lot about ducks,
duck.
Right? Yeah, no pun intended there. But and the assessments are mandatory, but here's the catch, but the assessments only come from the other owners in the community, then yes, it's an association and subject to regulation. But, yeah,
right.
The way I also understand, however, is once you start allowing entities other than specific condominium units to actually make those necessary payments, those mandatory payments, you're now out of regulation by the DBPR. But in order to give you a more intelligent answer, I have to look at your condo documents. It's not something I can actually discuss intelligently with you on the show without seeing what your documents say.
Yeah.
So
right.
Give us
Thank
a call
you,
at
Tom.
The office, 877,
Thank you,
number 4, Condo Craze, and I'd be glad to talk to you about it tomorrow.
Yes.
Thanks for the phone call.
Well, Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
Tuesday. How about we go to Ken from Boyton?
Hi.
How are you, Ken?
Very good. My issue is this. Our community is having a major problem with something called Ganoderma butt rot of the palm trees. We've probably lost about maybe 5% of the palm trees so far.
Okay.
And the board basically is saying that if you lose the trees, in other words, if you lose two of them, you have to rip out all three and replace them with three of the same type of palm.
Okay.
Now, I've done some research, and I've talked and gotten correspondence from the University of Florida Agricultural Extension, and also with Palm Beach County, the landscape inspectors. And both of them recommend that if you lose a tree to Ganoderma butt rot, that you should not replace it with another palm because of the likelihood of it also becoming infected and dying. Is there any recourse, or is there any other action that's being taken in other communities to come up with a more equitable solution?
Scott, you're the expert on butt rot.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
All right, yeah.
You're the arbologist.
I would imagine that, you know, any decision by the board to just replant palm trees would be protected by the business judgment rule, just because it seems like a reasonable thing to do. You know, I can only tell you that the only thing I would advise you is to, you know, get a little political with your board and try to, you know, convince them and teach them that maybe planting other palm trees wouldn't be the best idea if it's just going to cause an expense later on by replacing those.
Right. Doesn't make
if
sense.
They get the Ganoderma butt rot as well.
Yeah. Are you saying that they simply won't allow you to replant the same sort of trees?
No, they will.
No, they're saying that you must replace.
Oh, with the same trees.
Any tree,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
With other palm trees.
I would highly doubt that your declaration or covenant say that specifically palm trees have to be planted there. As long as some type of flora was planted there to replace it that would make everybody happy and would not cause expenses in the future, because you're telling me that these palm trees will just be just as susceptible to the same disease as the current ones are. Again, this is
makes
more...
Makes no sense.
Yeah,
put everybody through the expense again.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, but a lot of times, you know, you have to be willing to roll the dice and, quite frankly, pay the expense to go to a court of law, perhaps. This is an HOA?
Yes.
Okay, so you can probably have to go to mediation first and try to work something out at a mediation where you'd have to convince the board that the rule that they're making is simply not reasonable. But again, it's probably a lot cheaper starting off in mediation and trying to get something accomplished than it is by actually having to file a lawsuit. Here's an example where the statute may actually wind up saving you money.
Yeah.
Just try to actually work something out at a mediation conference with your board. Okay.
How do you initiate something like that?
You visit our association mediation website. Just go to association-mediation.com, and it will show you step by step how one goes about asking for mediation in an HOA setting. Okay.
Appreciate
all right,
it.
Ken. Thank you very much.
All right. Moving on from Ganoderma butt rot.
Yeah,
we want to take another
ducks.
Caller here.
Yeah. Anybody like want to talk about foreclosures or anything like that? Come on. How about it? All right. Who do we got? How about Bill from Boca?
Hi, Eric.
How are you, Bill?
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the seminar that we attended a few months ago.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much. What's going
on? Listen, I sent a certified letter to the board May the 22nd, and it was received and signed off on May the 25th. How long do I have before I can get a
generally
reply?
Boards, if they're going to ask for legal opinion from their counsel, have 30 days in order to respond to what's called a unit owner inquiry in a condominium. If they don't answer, then if you and the board wind up in litigation over that matter that you asked about and they prevail, they cannot get attorney's fees from you. So I hope that answers your question, Bill. We got to take our break. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Nancy and Lori, we see you there. We'll be back right after this.
Here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585.
All right, before we leave the duck stories, we have a vote from Jan Bergerman from Cyber Citizens for Justice as to which type of duck tastes better. I'm all for duck a l'orange. Yummy.
Nice.
Says Jan. Okay, so we got one vote for
but
duck
Eric,
a l'orange.
Just tell elaborate on what you were telling Bill just before our last break.
Oh, yeah.
If the board elects to get a legal opinion from an attorney with respect to an inquiry from a unit owner, it needs to respond to the unit owner that is seeking said inquiry within 30 days, and then it has an additional 60 days to get that legal inquiry.
Gotcha. So actually almost 3 months before they actually get back to the unit owner. So that changes my answer from before. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, good answer. All right. How about moving on? As if associations needed more to worry about in terms of collecting assessments. Last week, the 4th District Court of Appeals, which hears appeals of cases from Palm Beach County and Broward County, dealt what I believe to be at least a small blow to condos and potentially homeowners associations' abilities to collect past due assessments. And here's why. The law basically has always been that if a unit owner is getting foreclosed upon for failing to pay their assessments, a unit owner was never allowed to use a defense that the association failed to maintain the common areas. And this was actually held to be the law in the Abbey Park case, which ironically was also decided by the 4th District Court of Appeals. Well, last week in a case called eQualcomm Corp. versus Global Commerce Center Association, that same 4th District Court of Appeals seemed to back off that holding a little bit, and they now held that it was error for a trial court to grant the condominium association a summary judgment of foreclosure when that owner had a pending affirmative defense and a counterclaim that accused the association of failing to maintain the common roof, and that failure to maintain the roof caused them economic damages, and therefore they may actually be entitled to a set-off against the monies that they owe the association for assessments.
Yeah, and just let me say something here. When I sit down and I look at a lot of the answers and affirmative defenses we get from unit owners that our office has to engage in foreclosure litigation with, Ralph Rocco and I, attorney at our office and also the newest daddy at our office,
right.
we commonly see the affirmative defense as well, you know, the association's not cleaning the common areas, or they're not, you know, making sure things are in the right order. Thus, I don't have to pay, because it's almost looked at as like there are amenities that you have to pay for, and you're not under a duty under the law to pay your fair share of the association. So this is definitely a surprising case, because in the earlier Abbey Park case, the Fourth District held that the failure to maintain the common areas was just not an adequate affirmative defense to a foreclosure action. But in this new Qualcomm case, said that it is, but you know, there's a catch. The owner must be able to prove economic damages entitling the owner to set off. But, you know, Eric, you know, this is just going to probably just cause a lot more litigation.
Yeah.
Well, is every owner now who gets foreclosed on by the association going to claim that the association failed to repair the roof in the hope of delaying a foreclosure judgment against them?
Good question. And it's certainly something that the unit owners may now actually be able to, to try. But here's the catch. If they can't prove actual economic damages, then that defense is going to be stricken, and a foreclosure judgment will absolutely 100% be entered against them.
Yeah, but Eric, you know as well as I do, in order to prove that, we're going to have to engage in discovery, which is just going to drag out a lot of these cases.
Exactly.
So I agree. This isn't necessarily a windfall for the unit owners getting foreclosed upon and an opportunity to be creative and create a delay in their foreclosure case. The bottom line is that they still have to prove that the association's failure to take care of the common elements personally caused them economic damages. But the fact is, Eric, most of the time the defense isn't there just to save them from foreclosure. It's usually just to delay it.
Right.
This is going to help them.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely going to delay them. Like you said, it's going to cause associations perhaps to engage in more discovery. And again, the unit owners simply can't avoid a foreclosure by claiming that the place looks horrible, or the
right.
board is simply failing to keep up with the painting or the landscaping. Again, they have to show that they suffered actual economic damages. So again, like everything else we talk about, time is going to tell whether or not this new case hurts the associations in the long run. And if we become aware of any cases that involve this affirmative defense, we will let you know the results. How about we go to Nancy from Boca, who has been holding a very long time.
Thanks.
Thank you for holding, Nancy.
Hello. I have a question regarding the associations that are assuming titles for foreclosed units.
Yes.
So the question is there like a time frame that they can have that, collecting rent, renting it out, when they can actually sell those units on the market?
Yeah, the time frame to actually rent them out is the time period from between the time they actually get their certificate of title, from the time they actually buy the unit at a foreclosure sale, and the time that the first mortgage comes around and finally winds up foreclosing on the unit. Now, again, sometimes that period of time is like a year or two or more. So associations perhaps are best served, rather than sitting around doing nothing, or rather than sitting around waiting for the bank to finally pick up their foreclosures, an association may best be served, especially if it's a higher-end community and you have the ability to rent it out. You are better served by proceeding forward. Stop waiting for everybody else. You guys foreclose, get a judgment, rent out the unit, and if and when the bank finally gets around to foreclosing, you've collected rent from that unit for a year or two or more, so it makes sense. But that's the time period that's at issue, Nancy. It's the time period between when the condo or HOA actually gets title to the unit and the time period between the bank actually coming around and foreclosing. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
You got it. All right, how about we go to Lori from Miami. How are you, Lori?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Eric, for everything that you do for us.
Thank you so much.
Really, really appreciate it. And taking your time out on a Sunday of a long weekend.
Thank you very much.
Well, what I wanted to ask you was we have a situation with our association where they've gone ahead and they've decided to have a roofing project of over $600,000, and now they're trying to pass a special assessment for this. And but they haven't adopted the budget yet, and they just sent out a two weeks prior notice of the budget, but they haven't included any proxies in that for voting, nor have they notified the membership in any way of these discussions or progressive meetings on this sort of expenditure.
Okay, you raise a couple of different points. I hear something about a special assessment for $600,000, but then I also hear that they sent out notice of the annual budget meeting, and that's why you mentioned the 14-day advance notice, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you also said that they didn't send out proxies when sending out the budget. The only reason that the board would send out proxies when sending out the budget is not having to anything to do with the special assessment. You send out proxies when you're giving unit owners the opportunity to vote whether or not to waive full funding of reserve accounts. That's the only reason why proxies would be included. Again, sometimes there's confusion among unit owners. The members of the community never vote on the budget for the community. The only thing that they get to vote upon, basically, when it comes to the budget, is whether or not reserves are going to be fully funded. That's the only reason why the board would send out those proxies. So if they didn't send out the proxies, my guess is they're probably not giving the unit owners the opportunity to even vote on whether or not reserves should be fully funded or not. That's my guess.
And okay, again, well...
Go ahead,
okay,
I'm sorry.
Okay, because in our condo documents, if we want to refuse the budget, we only need 10% of the membership to them to come up with an alternative budget.
Here's where a lot of people get confused. The question is, and I ask this question all the time at the seminar, can budgets increase by 115% or more? And a lot of people, even people who've been on the board for years and years and years, tell me, no, it can't. There's a you know, statutory cap. There is no statutory cap. What the statute says is if the budget goes up by more than 115%, then you are right, Lori. 10% of the people there can then petition the board and have a meeting at which the unit owners can vote for a substitute budget. I'm practicing 19 years, and I've never seen it happen, not even one time. Not once. There's a whole bunch of talk about that 115%, but I've never seen it happen one time. Okay,
so they're good. So I guess the strategy is they're going to go ahead and pass the special assessment, and put the rather than putting the increase in the budget, they're going to put the increase through a special assessment.
Exactly, that's what it looks like. Now, is that all going to be take place at one meeting, or is that going to be take place at different meetings? Because if it's going to take place at a different meeting, they're going to have to do an additional mailing than the one that they use for the budget.
No, it looks like they're going to take it. They're going to take it all in one meeting.
Okay, so then in that mailing to you, they must have included details about the special assessment, how much it's going to be, how much it's going to be per unit, what the repayment terms are, what the actual special assessment is going to be used for. Is that also included in the mailing?
Yes, they have. But the problem is that they haven't. None of the membership has been communicated on previous meetings. They don't post any minutes, or they don't have any minutes available to know about about the roofing project. They don't even have minutes from our last election that didn't take place.
Right. Well, at least from what I'm hearing, though, Lori, I have to tell you, it looks like they're being advised properly, and it looks like it's being done right. But if you have any more questions about this specifically, call us at the office, 877, the number 4 Condo Craze, and I'd be glad to talk about it a little more with you if you'd like. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Hey, Karen.
Oh, thank you.
Does this guy know condo law or what?
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I might make stuff up like right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
No, it's impressive.
Let's take a quick break. We can come back and I can make up some more stuff. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. And we are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We've got a lot of people on the phone, but first we're going to cover some business.
Yeah, just really quick on a lighter topic just for a moment. We had the pleasure of giving our Condo Craze board certification course last week at Palm Air 4 Condominium in Pompano, which was sponsored by Smith Watson Parker. It was a lot of fun. We had a great turnout, and a lot more people are now certified. Remember, we can bring the Condo Craze board certification course to your association if you have the facilities to accommodate about 100 people. And if you can do that, then again, give us a call at Glazer & Associates at 954-983-1112. Again, that's 954-983-1112. And just make arrangements for us to come to you. I think, Scott, actually we're at 1,300 people or so now that we've certified, believe it or not.
That's a lot of people,
Glazer. That's a lot of potential vice presidents and presidents and condo members out there. Yeah, you're not kidding. Some of the unit owners may not be happy about that, but Anyway, moving on. Again, just to remind our listeners, the law has changed. Now you can get certified within 1 year prior to becoming a board member or 90 days after being elected to the board. And as long as you continuously remain as a member of the board, you do not need to get recertified. However, once you get off the board for any amount of time, you must get recertified. So keep that in mind. How about we go to Hal in Fort Lauderdale? How are you, Hal?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for holding so long.
My question is about handicap parking.
Okay.
We're in a condo in Fort Lauderdale, and all our parking spots are assigned to residents. We have two handicap spots, and my question is, are these spots required to be used by residents with handicap stickers, or are they for handicap visitors or guests that have handicap stickers?
Question for you, first of all, are there any commercial units in your building?
No.
No. Okay. So there's even a question, quite frankly, as to whether or not it's required, and you have to check with your local municipality, to even have handicap spots. It may not even be required in your property. And that's the first step. And assuming if it is not required, or even if it is required, quite frankly, you probably have to check with what your local building official indicates how those spots are to be used. I don't know. It may be up to that municipality as to whether it needs to be reserved for the exclusive use of unit owners who live there or guests. And again, since there's no commercial units in your property, it may not even be necessary at all. But the first place that I would start with is the local building official.
Yeah, we can't intelligently tell you really what's going on with Fort Lauderdale just because we don't know the municipality, you know, off the top of our head. But I can just tell you generally that handicapped spaces are for use of by anybody with a handicap sticker, and regardless of whether or not they live in a development or not.
Yeah, but we've had situations, and I understand where Hal's coming from. Some people say, well, wait a minute, I have a handicap sticker. I want permanent access to that spot in front of the building from now on. That's mine.
Well,
exactly what the situation is. The people have a regular parking spot, and they have condemned the spot that is handicapped and say, I want to use it.
Right.
So thereby getting two spots rather than one.
This happens all the time. That's why I would start out first with the municipality to find out if there's actually any local codes that would require those unit owners to have preference to get that spot in front of the building. Mm-hmm. Start there, Hal, and then give us a call at the office.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
Thank you. How about we go to George in Deerfield? Time is ticking, George.
A couple of quickie questions. Roof repair, does that require a permit?
Oh, absolutely. No two ways about it. Roof repair will require a permit, especially if you're talking about in a condo building?
Yeah.
Oh, unquestionably. It's going to require
a
permit.
Certification.
Yes.
Your certification for board members, is that compulsory?
Being certified is compulsory. What's not compulsory is attending a course to become certified.
It's the best way to go, though.
Yeah, you would think. No two ways about it.
Every board member has to produce a certification?
Right. Certification is two ways. One is by going on the internet and visiting the DBPR's website and getting a silly affidavit to fill out that basically calls yourself a condo law expert and that you've read all the documents, you've read the laws, and that you know what you're doing. Or the second way is to simply take a course. And again, we teach it typically at the Hard Rock once a month. We're going to probably restart in September, or we've been teaching it at condominiums. And
Your certification, the certification, it could be obtained just by a matter of filling out a bunch of forms and saying, I read the information.
Not even a bunch, by filling out one form. Kind of insulting to
one form, and that's it. Good.
Yeah, in my eyes, it's insulting to the people who actually take time out and attend the course.
Right. Now, can work be done, like a roof repair for $45,000? Can it be done, and then they have a board meeting to say that we're considering it, that we're for a special assessment?
You're saying the work was already done, and then they're passing a special assessment?
Yes.
Well, typically it's the other way around, but I'm guessing that it was done, you know, as an emergency. Was that why there was no meeting at first?
No, they've been having their discussions behind the scenes, and now they're coming forward next week, and they're saying, here's a special assessment for a bunch of stuff, and I know that the work was done because I was on the roof when the guys were on the roof.
Well, I'd make sure before they vote on any special assessment that the work that was done was, in fact, done by someone who's licensed and insured and actually bothered to pull a permit. because if not, the condo is going to wind up in some serious trouble should anybody report the condo to the local municipality. That I can tell you. And so is the guy who did the work. So
right.
That's the first thing. But let's assume for the sake of a moment that it was actually done by a licensed and insured person. Then I would tell you that the board probably still has the authority to pass a special assessment if that roof repair bill is unpaid, because that bill got to get paid. Otherwise, you can wind up with a lien on the building. Okay?
Right. All right. Now, for just homeowners who are not happy with what the board is doing, how do you get started to kind of replace them, stop them? What do you do first?
Long story short is you're talking about the recall attempt, and the recall attempt is basically you get a majority of unit owners to sign a petition, not just any petition. Those forms you should actually get off the DBPR's website and talk to an attorney first. And basically, if you get 50% plus one of the people to vote it out the board of directors, and if you're removing a majority of the board, you need a majority of the board, a majority of people to actually be willing to substitute, then you can get them out, all right? But that's a topic for
somebody,
a whole different show.
You have to get somebody to run now for the board.
Exactly. You have to have people willing to take their place. Absolutely. George, I am sorry we didn't get to your call from Deerfield, but it is time to go. And again, whether you're an association or a unit owner, if you have questions about condo law, HOA law, collections, elections, assessments, foreclosures, or even ducks, call us at Glazer & Associates, 877, the number 4, Condo Craze. We will speak to you next week.